Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Petrified Podcast. I'm your host, Damian Martinez, here with my co-host,
Eric Lover.
Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed last week's episode on our take of the Sinners. And follow us on Instagram. We hope y'all are following us on Instagram. Spread out the word of our podcast. And today, we are talking about Until Dawn, the movie adaptation of the video game. If you haven't played the video game, neither have I, because I own Xbox. I don't own a PlayStation, or I don't have a PC either. Eric, have you?
I do own PlayStation. I, however, did not have the game. I did go looking for the game before, you know, we went to go see the movie. But we live in a rather, I wouldn't say it's a small town, but options are definitely limited here.
Yeah, it's very limited here.
And so if you happen to be passing through Lubbock, Texas, and you're looking for a copy of Until Dawn on PS4, you'll be sorely traveling about 100 miles south.
You'll find it on PS5, though.
Yeah, you can totally, if you want to, you know, throw $5 at a PS5.
Yeah. But the movie, we're going to talk about this. We know there's a lot of hardcore fans out there that have played the game, that have loved it. I did watch a gameplay of it after the movie and was unfortunately disappointed afterwards. But we're going to go... First of all, we're going to talk about it just as movie viewers, not as...
Yeah, completely unbiased, just how we went in it. Yeah. Because neither of us had played the game. We didn't know the story. So we just went and basically observed it like a standardized horror movie.
Yeah.
So.
And then, of course, afterwards, towards the end, we'll talk about the comparison between... because obviously you can't talk about the movie without talking about the game, which was actually very... Again, I wouldn't say revolutionary, but it was very a big point because it was kind of the choose your own adventure stuff, and that's what kind of kicked off most of the games afterwards after that.
Yeah, a lot have come in the line, like you were saying, like The Quarry and some other games have definitely come that you can tell Until Dawn definitely had an influence on creating.
Yeah. But movie-wise, we'll try to do as little spoilers as possible. But, I mean, we're reviewing the movie. There's going to be spoilers. So I would say... Go check it out, but if you love the video game, I would say hold on to your money and until it comes out on streaming.
Yeah, wait for streaming.
Yeah. But pretty much a group of friends is trapped in a time loop where mysterious foes chase and kill them in gruesome ways, and they must survive until dawn to escape it. Starring Ella Rubin as Clover, Michael... I don't know if it's Cimino.
I think it's Cimino.
Is it Cimino? Okay. As Max, Odessa, I'm probably going to butcher her last name, like Azion.
Azion. Yeah.
Azion. As Nina. Ji Young Yu as Megan. Belmont Camelli as Abe. Maria Mitchell as Melanie, Clover's sister. And, of course, you do have Peter Stormare making a, I guess you could say, a reappearance for the game, so you know that it's tied to the game, because he is also in the game. And pretty much these group of friends that go out, what is it? It's like Clover loses her sister. Weirdly, loses her sister. I guess loses her, but when you get into the meat and potatoes of it, I mean, she didn't really lose her, like, Melanie went off on her own because their mother had passed away.
Yeah, later in the movie you find out that their mother had passed away, and she asked, obviously, Clover to go with her multiple times, but Clover gracefully declines.
Yeah.
Then Melanie goes out on her own, and I think a little bit of, you know, she basically comes up missing.
Yeah, that's a year prior.
Yeah, there's no contact or anything like that. So the basic start of the movie is that Clover gets her loosely, and I'll emphasize loosely, knit band of friends together,
yeah,
if you want to call them that, to go out and look for her sister with her.
Yeah, they're going on a road trip pretty much to kind of retrace the steps, you know, of Melanie, pretty much like where she was. I think it's a year before, you know, I guess she went missing. And so they're pretty much like going on a road trip, hanging out and kind of retracing the steps of Melanie. And they get to a gas station, and you get introduced to Peter Stormare, who is Dr. Hill.
But at this point, he's just the shopkeeper.
He's just the shopkeeper.
That's all he is. He's the mysterious. And, you know, Clover is inquiring, you know, have you been here long? Have you worked here long? And he basically emphasizes that he was there last year and the year before that. So obviously, like, he needs some retail therapy, man. He needs some help. He's not happy where he's at the, you know, convenience store.
Yeah.
But she feels that perhaps he may know something about her sister.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact that she went missing.
But he says, like, you know, people ask me who went missing all the time because people disappear into a town, you know, from a town up the road. People go missing all the time. So people come in and stop by, and they always ask, you know, if their loved one is missing. So she gets excited, and they decide to drive to that little town in a storm.
Well, the storm really picks up as they're driving.
Oh, yeah, as they're driving
towards the storm. Then the heavens open up, and, you know, 980,000 pounds of rain pour upon the vehicle.
Yeah. And Clover wants to turn back, but Abe says, no, I've already turned it. So he says, I've already, like, turned it around, like, two times already. Like, I'm not doing it again. So meaning that he's actually made an effort to, like,
to escape it. It's almost like one of those vortex spots that just keeps drawing you and pulling you in.
But they make it through to
that's a welcome center.
Oh, yeah, welcome center. Or like an Airbnb, like a bed and breakfast kind. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, it looks like when you travel state to state, like, they'll have little welcome centers.
They're just
refurbished houses where you go in and they have like a little guest book. Like, even when you're driving city to city here in Texas, you'll sometimes find them. And then you just, you know, you sign in, show that you were there, and, you know, go look at the history. I think due to the fact that there was the historic event of the entire city burning down, they wanted, you know, to know who had come to visit.
It was a mining town, right?
Yeah,
and it collapsed in on itself. Is that what it was?
Yeah, there was an underground fire that.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, it burned from inside out.
Yeah, it's like a microwave.
But the love dynamic within the group, Max used to date Clover, and then they broke up. Or he broke up with her, as he put it.
Yeah.
Abe and Nina are together, and they are freshly together. That is revealed.
Yeah. They had the Logan's Run beeping on them because apparently it's revealed that Nina can be with no one for more than 3 months.
Oh, jeez.
And they're at their 3 month relationship mark. So guess who's on the outs there, Abe? Time to go. Yeah.
And then Megan is the. What is she like?
She's a non-clairvoyant clairvoyant. it's eluded through kind of like the assumption is made that she has some form of like
intuition,
sight beyond sight.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she doesn't really use it to. I mean, it's used a couple times, but not to what I'd really consider a benefit.
It's used like very poorly. I would say in the movie. But, yeah, so she's like the, you know, she can, you know, before they leave to the town, when they're at the gas station, they're, like, doing a little circle to kind of, you know, tune in with each other and kind of, you know, get the vibe of Megan, I guess you could say, like, kind of get her energy, you know, because that's the last place she was seen, and trying to see, you know, if this is the spot where they're going to finally find her. And so that's how you get introduced to her. I guess you could say her powers.
Yeah, her gifts.
Or her gifts, yeah. Shitty gifts, but they're gifts.
Yeah, and that's the first thing that, you know, Peter Stormare's character notices is he's like, what are y'all doing outside? Oh, are you praying?
What I love about Peter Stormare is he does not change his accent. Unless he's Russian.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was going to say. What about the Baba Yaga? I was just waiting for that.
With the pencil. No, but I like him as a person. But, yeah, so they get to this area, and what's weird is there's, like, a rain circle around the whole house.
Yeah, this one residence has, like, no rain falling on it.
Yeah.
But there's, like, a torrential storm all the way around it. So, you know, Abe is the one in the group with solidified brain. And so he's like, oh, there's a name for this. And so then they're kind of like, ah, oh, bull, like, you don't know what you're talking about. And he's like, no. So, of course, he's going to Google it. So
it's like a rain wall is what he's saying.
Yeah, it's a rain wall. But the funny part about it is, like, as you're watching the movie, you'll start to notice these little inconsistencies. There's, like, no service anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, they're trying to, like, call out. There's no service. I can't get a signal. But you got a signal, and you got Wi-Fi enough to look up rain wall.
Yeah, that was, I didn't know, I did not notice that, yeah.
Yeah, that was right, the one thing that threw me off, because later in the movie, they're looking for a phone. They're like chomping at the bit. They can't make contact with anyone.
But that moment.
But that moment, you know, the evil spirits of the past were like, you can Google.
Yeah, so they decide to not stay the night, but, you know, Nina signs her name in the book. Abe goes into one of the rooms and sees the missing posters. Megan goes into the bathroom to kind of, you know, because she's getting, like, bad vibes already. Like, it's taking a lot out of her. She can feel the energy there. It's, like, terrible. Clover goes out into the rain because she thinks she sees her sister. And she kind of goes through the rain. Something's watching her.
And Max the thirst trap follows out.
And Max her... Yeah. Cuck, as you could say.
That is literally what he's been described of in every review of this movie.
I've seen other reviews.
Even like super good ones are like, dude, this is the cook boy. I'm like, dude, he's like, yeah.
Apparently,
even though he used to date with Clover, he just wants one more chance.
Yeah.
And
so he goes and he pulls her out of the rain because she was kind of lost, and he pulls her out. And that's when there's a clock on the wall. That is an hourglass
with a skull above it.
Yeah. And it finally turns over. And that's when, I guess you could say, like, the whole... I will give it to this movie. The stuff happens immediately. Like, it starts getting down to the story. Like, it starts getting down to everything. Like, I like that. You get introduced a little bit of the characters. I think they should have done better at, you know... kind of getting you attached to these characters.
Yeah, like, character relatability would have been, it definitely was not the strong suit of this film.
No, it was not.
Like, these people don't relate well as in a relationship, as friends.
Yeah, they're
as anything. They're like this.
They're more like strangers thrown into a situation rather than friends thrown into a dangerous situation.
Yeah. Plus, they don't really give you any backstory. I mean, they do show you that Clover obviously lost her sister a year ago. And they go into the fact that her and Max used to date. But beyond that, everything's, like, real, like, surface level. Like, stuff you could, like, meet somebody at the bus stop and, like, figure out more about them in 2 minutes than you could half the characters in this movie.
Yeah. But, so, now they want to leave. Or they see Abe finds the missing posters, and he's like, hey, like.
And they notice when Nina's signing the guest log, that a lot of the names repeat themselves.
Yeah.
So it kind of like sparks her interest because she's like, why has this person been here like 15 times or so? Yeah.
And it gets worse. Like, the handwriting gets worse throughout. So there's that. And then Abe, he pulls one of the posters on the wall in this room, and it's Melanie. And it's her missing poster. But the thing is, like, there's no, you know, most missing posters, they have like a description of the person, you know, height, weight, you know, eye color, stuff like that. This one, it's just like their pictures and it just is missing.
Yeah.
And so all that happens, and then that's when stuff starts to go down, and they get chased by a clown, not clown face. It has a mask.
Yeah, it's like a porcelain mask.
Yeah, it's a porcelain mask. And, they die pretty quick. Every single one of them. Not to spoil it. I mean, too much. But, I mean, that's what happens. They die. He kills every single one of them. And I will give it credit to practical effects. They went heavy on the practical effects. It was really good. You know, Abe gets freaking cut in half. You know, and then Nina gets a pitchfork through pickaxe through the back. Yeah. Yeah, everybody dies pretty much. Oh, stabbed in the eye. Max gets stabbed in the eye.
Yeah, and there was like the good thing I saw about that was there was a piece of eyeball dripping down the side of the blade.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. Like, I got to give it up for that.
Yeah.
So.
And there was that. I mean, they all die by this person. And then once they die, they wake up again in the same positions that they were before. You know, what was it? Nino writing in the book, Megan in the bathroom, and the, you know, wiping the mirror off. Abe pulling off the last, you know, picture that was on the wall.
And the cool part about it, though, is that they do carry like residual energies through their respawning.
Oh yeah, they have the marks.
So they have little bits of the marks. It was kind of like, it was kind of a throwback, you know, not to bring out other movies, but Donnie Darko.
Yeah.
When Frank catches it in the eye and you see him in the mirror at the end of the movie, like touching his eye. Like, yeah, literally, like they're standing there, like feeling where his eye got punctured.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they had all these like little residual effects that followed him through the respawnings. So it's kind of cool because they're like, oh man, my eye kind of hurts. I don't, and they have full recognition as to what happened.
Yeah, they all know that they died.
They all know that they got killed. But that's another thing. Like, if I had gotten killed and then I was respawned, I would be freaking out. I would be like, oh, my gosh.
That's my thing, yeah. Their reaction
they're
to
like
it.
They're, really nonchalant about the fact that they all just got wasted by this guy with a porcelain mask.
Yeah.
Like, no, I mean, they just kind of all fall into suit. Like, they know what's kind of there. And that's something, you know, I feel like the director could have really used was to make it really relatable to people is, yeah.
Hey, have them freak out more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Them, yeah.
Like, if I respawn, if somebody shoots me in the head, and then I respawn, I'd probably wake up, like, with a panic attack. Like, oh, my God. Like, reach into my head to see if the hole's still there. Like, when you wake up from a nightmare.
Yeah.
But that it didn't have any of that. It was just, oh, we're chimed in. We know what's going on.
Yeah, did y'all just die? Like, yeah it was really, yeah, not too nonchalant, but it was just like, man, I would not have that reaction. I'd be freaking out, like, if I just all of a sudden came to after I just died. And so, yeah, so that happens. And then the clock on the wall restarts. And now you're kind of getting it. You know, you're like, oh, okay, so every time they die, you know, the time restarts. And assuming by the title of the movie, you know, oh, they have to make it until dawn without dying, pretty much. And so this time around, what's her name? Megan gets possessed. And lights go out. They find her in the room with all the missing posters. Oh, by the way, the missing posters now have them on it now.
Have all five of them, yeah.
And she's hovering above the ground. She's, like, you know, floating. And she's, like, pointing at every single picture on the wall. And is basically speaking with their voices, the missing persons. And with what they're saying, they're pretty much trapped there in that area. And it's like, oh, like something's going on. She's speaking with everybody's voice. And pretty much they're saying that they're trapped. They want to escape. And, you know, they can't. And finally she turns to her friends and says, don't let them let them in or let it in. And then she collapses, or she snaps her neck. She gets her neck snapped by a spirit or something, and she dies. Door starts slamming in the front, and that's when you know, oh, crap, like, this one, you know, the first one was a killer. This one is a spirit.
It's an entity.
It's an entity, yeah. And this thing, like, throws them around, throws Clover outside, and there's a witch's house in the front yard.
Yeah. There's...
That's the thing. Okay, she gets dragged to the house by something, by the whatever this invisible force is, and it lets her go, opens the door to the witch's house, and she stands up and just, like, it gets pulled back, which was really cool. She gets pulled into the darkness of the house. The back of the house, they're like, oh, Abe is probably the only sane one in this movie. He's like, well, we gotta go. We gotta leave and this and that. And Max is like, no, I gotta go after her. What if she's
and then of course, like, the in true relationship fashion, Nina starts in, and Nina's like, oh, Abe, you're an ass, kind of a deal. Like, oh, you don't like any of us. I can't believe, now, no, you're supposed to be in a relationship with this person. This is supposed to be your boyfriend. But she, like, just starts, like, berating him and just, like, chopping him
Mind
down.
Mind you, he's, like, the only sane, like, he's...
Yeah, he's like, hey, listen, there's nothing we can do to save this person. Let's get the hell out of Dodge. Like, I've got my car keys on me. My car's right out front. Let's get in, go somewhere, and not just leave and run away. He's like, let's go get some help.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not saying let's just abandon the whole ship and like let these people die. You know, he's not throwing them to the wolves, but you know, it gets read like that.
Yeah.
And of course, Max, in his ultimate pursuit of, you know, Clover's panty drawer again, he runs outside, you know, towards the, you know,
towards danger.
The witch's house. And okay, so another thing throughout the movie is like it references the one pull that it has from the game is that it references the butterfly effect. And so
reference being a very light.
Yeah, it's extremely light. Clover has a butterfly necklace. At the witch's house, there's a butterfly made out of bones.
Yeah.
And so they're referencing it, but it's kind of like the Spawn movie showing you Angela. We're going to reference it, but we're not going to tell you nothing about that.
Yeah.
You just kind of got to figure it out for yourself. So they do that, and she's like, she's in the cabin now with the witch. And the...
It's not like a ventilator or something. Yeah. Or a breathing mask.
Yeah, she's... Yeah. So
she needs oxygen pretty much.
I don't know, but see, that's a deal. I don't know if she's on oxygen or if she's on amyl nitrate. What's she on? Because basically, like, she starts coming after Clover. And when she gets after Clover, she gets a hold of her and starts pulling her and stuff. And then she starts putting the mask over Clover's face so that Clover breathes in.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, is it a drug to make Clover hallucinate? Because that's what I was thinking when I was watching it.
Yeah.
Dude, is she going to, like, fill you up with amyl nitrate and then you're going to start tripping out? And then she's going to, like, do all kinds of hoochie, you know, witchcraft on you?
Yeah, but the witch disintegrates.
Yeah, she.
And Clover's possessed now.
She turns to ash and then, you know, much like, you know, Megan had been possessed by the spirit.
Yeah, now she's Clover. Possessed, yeah.
So she comes out and, of course, you know, Abe lying in wait. Oh, honey, sugar, nook him.
No, Max.
Max, yeah. That's right. So Max, oh honey, sugar, nookum, nook. Yeah.
He dies by her hand.
Obviously.
So
he should. I mean,
So he dies by her hand because she snaps his neck. Or I forgot what she does to him. And goes after the other ones. Now mind you, the other two, they drove off into the rain. And Nina's like, oh no, I can't do this. I can't leave my friends behind. It's like, dude. You either stay there and die, or you leave and at least try to make it out. And as they're driving out, there's like a giant monster blocking the road. So they have to turn back and go back into, you know, the area of the circle area. And unfortunately, the mask guy is back and he slices up both of them.
Yeah. And I know what you're saying. Dude, a monster came out of the woods? Where did that come from? What was that all about? You'll still be asking yourself the question after you leave the movie theater. It's not explained.
Yeah.
Like, it was a great design, don't get me wrong.
I mean, if you play the game, you obviously know these creatures. But if you're just a regular, like, just a movie watcher, if you're going to see it just as a horror fan, chances are you're like, oh, man, there's just weird creatures coming out. Well, clown or mask guy slices them up, the killer, the serial killer. He slices them both up, and then as possessed Clover, is walking across to go, you know, kill the others, she gets hit by him, and they all die again.
Yep.
They all respawn, and now they got to figure out, like, what's going on, how come, you know, things are happening. Now there's a water tower outside, like, you know, what the heck? So they decide, like, oh, yeah, and then the witch tells them, you know, they have to survive the night, pretty much. They have to make it through until the morning. So they decide to, you know, take refuge into the bathroom.
So at this point, yeah, they're just deciding that we're just going to, you know, we're going to stand our ground. We're going to get into a secured, stabilized place, and we're just going to, like, kind of, like, wait it out. So they all respawn in the bathroom, you know, so they decide, okay, well, then old Abe comes through, and Abe's got a glass. And
he's thirsty.
Now, remember, in the beginning, they had tried to get a glass of water, and there was no water.
Yeah.
Yeah. But now Abe's like, hey, you know, I'm going to get me a drink of water here in this glass. And, you know, Megan's like, oh, the water doesn't work.
But it turns on this
and
time.
And it turns on and it starts flowing in the glass. And he's like, ah. So he drinks a whole glass. And then everybody else is like, man, I'm thirsty as all.
He drinks two of them.
Can we have some? And he gives them one glass of water for, like, the remaining four people. Generous.
Like, sip, pass. Yeah. Yeah.
So they all partake of the water. And they're sitting there and they're formulating a plan of what they're going to do. And then lo and behold, stomachs start to mess up.
Abe starts coughing up blood. He's like really messed up. And they're figuring out, you know, if we just stay in this restroom and make it till morning, we'll be fine. And then Abe blows up.
Yeah, apparently it's not only like, you know, Montezuma's revenge, but it like literally will make you explode. So Abe, you know.
Explosive diarrhea.
He's done.
Yeah, he gets torn up.
Now, Abe drank like two glasses.
So he blew.
So he was done. He was like toasted. But everybody else, you know, and that's what I was kind of thinking. I was thinking that obviously the amount you took in would affect the way that you went out. But no. The people who had like one little baby drop, just bubble guts.
Yeah, Nina, she explodes.
Yeah, she.
In the restroom.
Well, they all explode.
Yeah. Well.
Some more than others.
Clover tells Max, you know, they're going to die and respawn anyways. You know, because they kind of figure out, okay, well, those names in the book, like, obviously this happened to them. This was going on. Maybe we still have some time to kind of figure out what's going on, how to get out of here. You know, if we die, hey, at least we still have a chance to try to figure out, you know, the next time. So he tells him, she tells Max, you know, choke me and kill me. He can't do it, of course. Obviously, he loves her. He can't kill her. And then his head pops like an airhead.
Oh, but don't forget, man, you're totally passing Megan's story. Remember, so they're actually Max and Clover and Megan are fleeing the bathroom where everybody else has exploded.
Yeah,
and then they're going, dude. Megan gets the brunt of the deal. So she not only starts coughing and like blowing up, but she has like multiple like, dude.
Yeah, her leg blows up.
She holds it down. Poof.
One of her legs.
Like, the right side of her body. Poof. Like, dude.
Well, her stomach like starts to.
Oh, yeah. She looks pregnant.
Expand,
it like expands out like she's like, you know, giving birth to Satan and then poof.
And then she dies.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know.
Max and Clover.
Romeo and Juliet go over in the corner and play their little, you know.
Choke me.
Yeah, lover muffin game.
Yeah, and so Max can't do it, and his head explodes. And I think, well, I forgot what happened to her. Like, her something was going to explode either way. And then that's when the doctor comes in, Dr. Hill, a.k.a. gas station guy. And he tells him, like, you know, like, hey, you know, y'all are like, oh, y'all almost made it. Y'all only had a little bit of time left, and unfortunately, you know, y'all are going to die. And he's pretty much telling them, like, what's going on. Kind of like, I'm the one, you know, observe. Or he's like, y'all are, like, interesting to observe pretty much. Like, you know, he's pretty much studying them on what's going on. And then her head pops. But now they kind of know.
They know sort of what is going on. And then it gets solidified upon their next respawn. Because, lo and behold, Abe is looking around, and Abe's like, hey, man, there's, like, these videotapes and a VCR.
Yeah, they go to the basement, and the basement is not a basement. It's supposed to be the rest of the house because there's windows downstairs.
But they look out into solid dirt.
Yeah.
So you could tell it's sunk off its foundation.
Yeah, and so finally they figure out, like, oh, this whole town, you know, they find, like, articles, they find stuff like that about the town burning. And then they realize that, oh, like, the whole town went underground. This house was taller, and the rest of it is now underground. That's why we can only see dirt outside. Or not outside, but through the windows.
Yeah.
And so they find some tapes. Max finds some tapes. They put it in, and they, you know, it's porno. The first tape is. But they find, you know, a tape that kind of describes what Dr. Hill was doing. They find, you know, obviously all of his stuff pretty much.
Yeah, the sanitarium, the fact that there was a sanitarium in the hill and Dr. Hill ran it.
Yeah.
And so it you know, alludes to the history of the town.
Yeah, and pretty much like the negative energy there is causing the residents to change into things. And one of the guys on the film, he changes into a Wendigo. And you could see, like, every day, like, he keeps dying, but he's being respawned. And he asks Dr. Hill to just, like, end it. Like, he doesn't want to do it anymore. Unfortunately, he keeps changing into this creature.
Yeah. And everybody, like, obviously, as they're explaining this on the tape, everybody's, like, looking at, you know, like, hey, wait a minute. Like, I have that condition. Like, my eye has been feeling this way. So Abe, you know, God bless his soul. He's like, hey, man, you know, like, my back's kind of hurting. Is there something over there, babe? So Nina looks at his back. Now, he has marks where, like, quills or something are growing out of his back.
Yeah.
Big, huge, like, festering one-inch, like,
spikes. Openings. Yeah.
And these spikes are coming out. And Nina's like, oh, no, there's nothing there. Which, once again, brings the love of that couple into question in the movie for me.
Yeah, dude, that's okay, so, like, throughout the whole thing, like, they get mad at Abe because he wants to just leave. Like, he wants to just, like, figure out how to get out of there, which a normal person would want to do. The problem is they're like, no, we're all buddies. Nothing can bad can happen to friends when we're together. Like, they're the fucking Care Bears or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Excuse my language, but... This movie, it did, like, at points, it did piss me off. It's like, dude, he's the only one. He's an ass, but he was, like, the only, like, one with, like, common sense.
Yeah, there's no real established likable character in the film.
There really isn't.
So Abe basically comes through as kind of the saving grace. Yes. Is he the outsider tool bag? Yeah, totally. 100%. But, once again, he's observing things. He's making logical decisions. He's not just following his heart everywhere that he goes.
Yeah. And see, the whole point of them going on this stupid vacation, because Clover blames herself, they're like, oh, it's not your fault. Well, kind of is. Like, these guys are like, at the beginning of the movie, he's a psych major, pretty much. He's like, you know, obviously studies the mind and people's conditions and all that. And he's like, so why are we doing this? He asked the group, oh, you know, because we're retracing her sister's steps, you know, when she was lost now. You know, we're, you know, kind of retracing everything. And he's like, this is not healthy. It's not like a healthy way to do this. Like, there's better ways to deal with, like, loss and stuff like that. And then they, like, immediately, like, dismiss him. They're just like, yeah, but we wanted to do it because we love her. And, you know, we know it's harmful, but she loves it. It's like, okay, but.
But on top of that, she loves it so much and she has, like, such. There's a lot of things about this movie that could have been great, a lot of things that couldn't, but one other thing that I noticed about this movie that kind of makes it a detriment is you waited a year? Dude, I'm sorry. Like if you disappeared off the face of the earth and I didn't hear from you for like 3 days, I'd be like, dude, where's Dame? I'd be at your job. Dude, where's Dame? Who saw Dame last?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be like, oh, well, Dame left off to go to the grocery store back last September, and I just haven't heard from. Like,
and she's like, I'll wait a year.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's my sister. I'll wait a year. Wherever she was going, even though nobody told me that she ever got there and I haven't heard from her, I'm not worried about that.
Like, yeah, dude. Yeah, that's the thing. So, yeah, these characters, like, they're trashing on him. And at one point when they're trying to escape, he's like, you know, because they want to fight. They want to pretty much hold down the fort, you know. And he's like, no. He goes, like, we need to, like, go. We need to find a way out of this. We need to go to that sanitarium and confront this guy. And, Dr. Hill comes on the radio, and he's pretty much saying, like, you know, all you have to do is make it until dawn. The problem is one of you has to die. So four of you can make it out, but one of you has to die.
And who's that one? Abe.
Abe,
they all look at Abe like, dude, you're like the weakest link.
No, and she's like, he's like, okay, done. Like, Abe was like, okay, fine. I guess coming to a conclusion, like, dude, he's not going to, you know, we're not all going to die, but we have to kind of cater to this guy. He's the only one with answers. Clover kind of gets on his side a little bit. And she's like, I want a meeting with you. And he's like, oh, I'm out in the woods. Like, come find me. And she's like, okay, I'm going to go by myself. And Max is like, no, you're not going to go by yourself. Like, I'm coming with you. And Abe's like, no, like, let her go. Like, let her go out there. And they're, like, pissed off at Abe. And they're, like, talking crap to him. And finally, Clover goes out there, and he's like, why? Like, because, you know, what is it? You know, he says, like, something to Max that, like, you know, she already broke up with you. Like, is this your way of, like, rekindling the fire? He shouldn't have said that, but, like, I guess in a time of stress, man, like.
Oh, I would anything. Have told that kid a long time ago. I would have been like, dude, you need to move on, bro. Like,
yeah, that's true, too. And so he gets mad, and, you know, they're keeping, like, all the killers at the house while, you know, Clover goes out there to confront Dr. Hill, even though he's most likely lying, that he's out in the woods by himself. But she goes out there and gets confronted by her sister, who is now a... She gets caught in a bear trap, and she gets pulled into the darkness, and it's revealed that her sister is turned into...
One of the creatures.
One of the creatures, like a Wendigo-looking thing. She's not a Wendigo. She's more like a just like some kind of savage creature.
Yeah.
Pretty much. She has the same dress on and everything that the day that she left, which is weird. But, yeah, she's...
Another thing, since you brought it up, the Wendigo thing.
Yeah.
So, the monsters in the film are supposed to be Wendigos.
And yeah.
Like, Wendigos are basically Native American folklore. And that being said... This region, everything that they're telling you. Now, note, they've left from Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Where they're at now, nobody knows. There are tribes in that part of the country, totally understandable. But they don't tell you anything that they're on native land.
Yeah, Dr. Hill mentions it in the videotape.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Yeah, it gets one little, like, sentence, but they don't expound on it at all.
Yeah, there's killers, there's... What is it? There's serial killers, and then there's
it's a box of Fruity Pebbles.
There's monsters, spirits, and all that that's trying to kill them. But yeah, her sister is turned into one. Max obviously goes after her, and Abe, unfortunately, back at the house, gets stuck by Nina, and yeah, she stabs him in the back with a pickaxe, and it's like, dude, come on, man. And there's, like, a little moment of, like, him trying to be human, like, trying to, like, hey, like, I still love you, even though you caught me in the back, pretty much.
Yeah, with a flipping pickaxe. Yeah.
And then the porcelain mask guy comes through and kills Nina and Abe. Max and Clover are running through the town now, because now they've entered the town. And they're pretty much talking, trying to hide from her sister. And pretty much saying, like, you know, we can make it out. We have one more chance to make it out. And, you know, we got to do it. Like, we got to do this chance. Now, mind you, you see them die on screen, like, what, 4 times, 5 times?
Yeah, at least.
When she wakes up this next time after they kill each other, pretty much. Or
yeah, he slits her throat.
Yeah, and then he goes out to the sister and...
Oh, but don't forget he...
Drinks the water.
Yeah.
There was like water dripping on one of the house or one of the...
Yeah, the boom boom water from the floor.
So he gets it, takes a sip, and then dies, yeah. But when they wake up again, apparently they've been at it for like 13 times.
Yeah. Well, they're sitting there and they're analyzing and they're like, well, we have at least one more time. And when she was actually talking to Dr. Hill, and Dr. Hill is... explaining everything, it basically comes out that the longest anyone has gone and, you know, is 11 times.
Yeah, 11, yeah.
So they start going off again, and they're like, oh, well, we at least have one more time. And once again, here's the voice of reason. Abe's like, oh, no, that book out there, that book shows this is like time number 15.
Yeah.
Like, we have done this 15 times now. And then everybody's like, what?
Yeah.
Like,
so now they're losing track of time. And then he's like, wait, they're forgetting stuff. Like, you know, they're trying to forget stuff. And he's like, wait, I think I recorded something like on the day, you know, we got here. So he pulls out his phone and it turns out like he has all the videos of when they died. My thing is that they're being respawned. Like, well, those videos wouldn't be on there anymore. Right. Like everything would reset.
No, because they keep their memories. They keep their memories of what happens. So it's logical to think that if they were to have recorded it with the cell phone, that basically that much doesn't really change. It's just
them coming back to life.
Yeah, it's not like Groundhog Day where everything gets reset. It's just their little microcosm of whatever they are that gets reset.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
So yeah, so we, like just how they retain memory, because like I said, even the residual effects of their slaughter comes back to them? Yes. So his videos that he has saved, and he saved all kinds of, like, good stuff. Yeah, hooray, Abe, again. Like, yeah, you suck at life, but yeah, you're great at this movie.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and because now Megan's gone. Megan is nowhere to be found now. And they're like, what happened to her? So he's going through the videos trying to look for her. They finally, you know, through all their killings, you know, they get killed by Wendigos and, you know, serial killers, and they get killed by a whole bunch of stuff. They find the video of Megan. And Dr. Hill had came in after they all died and went through these double doors that are in the basement that lead out to somewhere. So she's like, I'm going to follow him and see, you know, where he goes. And she follows him, and then she doesn't come back. So Clover, they're finally like, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to muster up the courage.
Yeah, because this is probably our last chance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if we die, either we reset and we try again, or we are finally dead, you know. So they all nut up, and they go out into the woods to go look for Dr. Hill. And, of course, they get attacked by Melanie, Clover's sister, and they get attacked by everything pretty much is getting thrown at them now. And so Clover gets a head start, and they stay back at the house to you know, slow everything down. And then finally they follow her. And, you know, this is like their redeeming qualities. They stick together. They fight off these things, and Clover makes it to the sanitarium. And not only that, you get the iconic scene from the game where the Wendigo pops his head out through the
little, that is one thing that I will say about this movie. This movie had like tons of great jump scares.
Yeah.
Like the stuff that they literally like put in there was just, I mean,
yeah, the Wendigos, the creatures, the, all that was good. Most of it was practical effects again, you know, which was a great choice. Makeup was amazing. Makeup was great. Obviously you had, you know, source material to draw from. So that was done really, really well. So, you know, shout out to that, because that's one thing that was done really, really well. But, yeah, the Wendigo scene where she's, like, with the lights go out and it's just the red, like, traffic light kind of going off and on, and you see the Wendigo.
She's hiding behind, like, a pillar or something, and the Wendigo's, like, up on top of it, and it's, like, sniffing around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's, like, you know, every time it goes off, he's, like, in a different position, which is pretty cool. I liked it. But she finally has a standoff with her sister, and there's like a spike poking out, like a wooden, like broken sign, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, I have to let you go. And she tackles her into the spike, and she gets snapped herself, but not too bad. But she impels her sister, and the sister dies. Kind of like being a, it's time to let you go, you know, thing. If these characters were written better, I think that would have had a much more significant part in this movie. But it's literally, unfortunately, a throwaway scene. I mean, honestly, it could be a throwaway scene. But she makes it to the sanitarium, and you find Megan. Megan's being tied up in the same, you know, sanitarium that the dude from the video, you know, that was turned into a Wendigo. And there's a...
Yeah, that actual Wendigo guy is, like, chained to the wall, and he's, like, basically become so rabid that he's, like, pulling the mounting block out of the wall.
Yeah.
Because he's just, like, so, like, rabid in trying to get to Megan.
She's tied to a chair.
Yeah.
But she does confront Dr. Hill, and he's pretty much saying, now, cool thing. Again, this is what's hard to draw from this movie. She goes into his office. They're pretty much having their talk. And he's pretty much saying that he has been observing her, you know, through her trauma and all that, that the town has this energy and she's kind of creating all of this stuff. You know, the reason her friends are dying, the reason she's dying, and all these things are coming out is because of the trauma that she, you know, faced with her sister leaving and her mom passing away. That's great. The problem is like, okay, but like, not saying that it wasn't trauma, but, like, it wasn't evil stuff to where she would create these things. You get me? Like, if she had, like, a very abused, like, childhood or a very traumatic childhood, and now this, you know, her kind of, you know, her energy because of this trauma is now
manifesting,
then I get it. But, dude, like, your mom passed away, which is sad, but it happens to everyone that has a mom. And your sister left because there was nothing tiring her there no more. And she asked you dozens of times
to come leave with her. And it just...
You and it's not like she left you with, like, an abusive father, or she left you, you know, in a rotten place.
She left you in a plush pad in Pennsylvania. Like, you can't knock the hustle. That's great.
Yeah. But no, like, and she's like, oh, my sister abandoned me. Well, she didn't abandon you. She's making a life of her own. So, like, there was...
And obviously, yeah. She didn't do too damn good at it. She ended up, like, you know, Wendigo bait in the middle of, like, some freaking hailstorm area. Like, yeah.
So, yeah. So, you know, Dr. Hill is pretty much telling her, like, you know...
While she's sitting there talking to him, too, something like...
The water's dripping from the ceiling.
There's water dripping, but Dr. Hill's, like thirsty for the coffee.
And on the table... is another, you know, he shows her that he's been reading her file from when she would go to therapy. And then on the another file, though, is, you know, is it John or Josh from the game?
Yeah.
The one who Rami Malek plays and from the game. His file is there, too. So it shows you that this could either be a sequel or a prequel to the game. So it shows that, and there's water dripping from the ceiling. He's drinking coffee or whatever. And mind you, here's the thing. How did he make that coffee?
He had his water imported. It's very similar to the Flint, Michigan water. You know, they've had that water crisis there for only gods know how long. So basically, FEMA brings bottled water to Dr. Hill's sanitarium.
See, that's my problem. Okay, weekly. So the water's dripping from the ceiling, and she gets the idea. Oh, if I just push this cup a little bit closer to it, which, I'm sorry, lazy writing, come on now. So she's like, oh, if I push this cup a little close to the water dripping from the ceiling, he might have to ingest some of that, you know.
That bubble gut water.
That bubble gut water. So, of course, she does it while they're talking, and she's like, no, I'm not, you know.
Okay, even though it wasn't the greatest, the one thing that I did think was great about that setup is she pushes the glass, the coffee cup, to catch the water. And then she pushes it back.
Oh, yeah.
Because,
she does push it back.
Because you do realize, I mean, honestly, if you're developing a character out of this movie that you want to, like, hang your hat on, Dr. Hill is probably the best damn character out of this movie.
Yeah.
So.
Well, here's the thing. He's already an established character.
Yeah, he's.
From the video games.
Yeah.
So you know who he is.
But his performance, I mean, even if he. Because I had never played the game.
He's very observant. Yeah.
Yeah. He's extremely observant, and he's very, like, I actually, like, relate to him.
Yeah.
He's the most relatable character out of this whole movie. So, like, when she does that, I'm like, yeah, you know what? I'm thinking I'm two steps ahead of you. Like, I've got you caught in my web. I'm the spider.
Yeah.
So, yeah, when she pushes it back, I'm like, good, good. Finally, brains from somebody because Abe's, like, way the hell down the hall.
Yeah, they're fighting off all the evil entities, and, you know, you're over here finally confronting Dr. Hill. And then he takes a sip of it, of course, saying that, you know, that his work is going great pretty much. And then, of course, he gets the bubble guts, and he explodes all over the place. She takes his keys, frees Megan, and everybody makes it out alive. And when they come out from under the ground, because, of course, they were underground the whole time, it's daylight, and boom, they made it until dawn.
I did like how they climbed out of the grave, like the Evil Dead poster.
Where yeah.
They were clawing out from underneath the gravestone through, like dirt and grass.
Yeah.
But I love the fact that after, okay, so I don't remember who went first because that's not very important. But okay, once the first person went through, the grass would be pulled out and so would the soil that surrounded you. You wouldn't have a covered up grave again. But for some reason, it's some form of magical canal.
So that gravestone is also going through a time warp. So it has to reset every time.
The ground, the soil resets itself.
I mean,
that
would make sense. It would have to reset itself because whoever comes there next has to go through it. So they make it out alive. They're free, and it's time to go home. You know, they went through their trials and tribulations, and everybody's happy now. They get into Abe's vehicle, which, by the way, he did provide the vehicle, but he was the one that was stabbed in the back and crapped on the whole movie.
I would drop them off at that freaking convenience store and be like, konnichiwa, suckers. I'd be out. Like, I'm sorry. You wouldn't get shit from me. I wouldn't call you. Nothing.
Yeah. But. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, they all make it out alive. And then at the very end, it shows, you know, his camera room where he was watching the house and all that. And it cuts to the cabin from the video game. So you're like, oh, so either he was been doing this and he, you know, that's Well, they're pulling up, so it has to be a prequel.
Yeah.
Because they are pulling up to the cabin they like are, they yeah. do in the game.
So, yeah. So my assumption was that
he's been studying Rami Malek's character, and now it's, you know, because he starts whistling, because he whistles in the movie when he every time he comes in when they're dying, when they're dead, he comes in every time. But at the end, you know, his whistle plays through. So he's like, oh, he's not dead. Like, he's still alive.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, it nods towards like, hey, but the next one would be the game. And that's what would continue the story. The problem now comparing it to the game, since now we're at the end of the movie, that's the whole movie. Wash, rinse, repeat, they die. They respawn. Spawn, die.
it's like a gruesome Groundhog Day.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Without, you know, such well-established characters like Bill Murray.
Now, we talked before we recorded about comparing it to the game. We saw a lot of reviews, a lot of people talking about how they took no source material from the game. Or very little, I should say. The director did. If you go into this as a gaming fan, a fan of the games.
Don't go into this as a gaming fan.
Yeah, you cannot watch it. But if you do, if you watch this as a fan of the game, you will be very, very disappointed. Because, one, it doesn't start out like the game. It is different characters. And everybody responds. And that's what I noticed after I went back and after the watching the movie, I went back and I watched the playthroughs, the game playthroughs. Obviously, from what I've read, there is like over 200 outcomes in this game. It's a choose-your-own-adventure survival game, horror game, and you pretty much, you know, have to keep these characters alive, or, you know, some die, some don't, and, you know, there's a good story with it. You know, these, you know, depending on how you start the game, either one sister dies or two sisters dies from, you know, Rami Malek's character, and pretty much they go back the next year and, you know, stuff goes down and people start dying. There's these creatures, there's wendigos, there's stuff like that, but there's a butterfly effect. And that's like the key element to this game is the butterfly effect. And at the beginning of not the main conflict, but the beginning conflict, but after that, once the game starts introducing you to characters and all that, it shows you like, hey, if you do this, you'll get a good butterfly, or, you know, you'll get the black butterfly that's bad and the red one. There, you know, there's different elements to this. And that's the whole thing to this game. And then in the movie, it just kind of dismisses all of it.
Yeah, it references it at like a couple key points, but it doesn't explain.
Yeah.
Like, if I went in having played the game, I would understand these things.
Yeah.
But when it comes off when you're just watching it as a movie, I think it does the same exact thing no matter what way you look at it. If you go into it watching it as a movie and you've never played the game, then it's just a ball of confusion.
Yeah.
And vice versa. If you go and play in the game and you try to relate the movie to the game, it's just a ball of confusion. Because when it comes down to brass tacks, didn't have a lot to do with each other.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it...
If it went under a different title and wasn't under the name of PlayStation, I think it would have been a decent movie to watch.
Yeah, I think
we left the theater thinking it was a decent movie.
Yeah,
but then of course, you know, we do our research for the podcast. We, you know, we watch everything we need to watch to make sure that we give y'all a good episode. And we're like, oh, they screwed up big time. The director screwed up big time, and a lot of people said that, and I'm like, oh, because at first we're like, man, why are people giving this bad reviews? And then we do our research, we do, you know, get our sources, and we realize, oh yeah, that's why.
I felt like it kind of had like to me, it kind of had like a as a movie, objectively watching it as a movie, I felt like it had a good story underlying,
yeah,
but it kind of felt like tarot. You know, in the fact that, yeah, you know, I got that tarot feel to it with the character development. It kind of had like these loose ends that were kind of stringy. It had Max constantly like trying to be, you know, like all smashing on Clover. And it just got like really weird.
Yeah.
And so it had like that loose-knit grip, which is the same thing we said about tarot. It had a great story. It had the potential to be so much more.
Yeah.
but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't developed.
Yeah.
So that's what I got out of it. I really, when I watched the movie, there were things that still left me guessing.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And that's
yeah.
why I went home and, you know, you and me also went in, we deep dived. And we were like, okay, what's this game about? What's that? And then when you realize that it's a choose your own adventure, and basically your decisions in life and your decisions in that moment are going to affect the outcome of what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Where that didn't really feel like that was really prevalent in the film. The movie wasn't like, well, if I run down this hallway and do this, then, you know, the porcelain face killer won't get me.
Yeah.
No, it was just like, hey, I've come to slaughter. Oh, no, we're all slaughtered. It's okay. We get to respawn.
That was the thing. And that's what bothered me after watching the game, the playthrough is, yeah, dude, like, oh, dude, that would have been a great concept. It would have just been hard to do because there's so many outcomes with, you know, the butterfly effect. But yeah, man, I think, you know, I was hoping that it would be straightforward, you know, without watching, you know, the first playthroughs of the game. And it was decent enough to like, yeah, you know, the characters kind of sucked. The characters weren't written very well. They weren't relatable, but they were written well enough to where you can kind of, you know, follow the story. And then, but once you watch the playthrough, or if you've played the games already, you're like, oh, dude, they didn't, like, they could have done this. They could have used this. He pretty much took the monsters from the game, created Groundhog's Day, and used those monsters.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't really know what, like, Sandberg was, like, I don't know. To me, it's like being given, I don't know, like, a great novel, War and Peace. It's like being given War and Peace.
Yeah.
And then you go through and you take it. And you're like, okay, I have War and Peace. I need to develop a film out of this. And then I watch the film and it's like, I don't know, shoot. Green Eggs and Ham. Like, I mean, not that Green Eggs and Ham isn't great. I've read it 1,000 times with my, you know, in my childhood. But you took a wonderful, like, life-changing movie. Because just to do a playthrough, like I was reading on, I haven't played it myself. And that was kind of why Dame and I just chose to do this. Because we're trying to like expand and go into all things horror.
Yeah.
And so that was why I brought it up. Let's go see this movie. Because it's basically, you know, it's reviewing horror. And we haven't reviewed a horror movie that's based on a video game.
Yeah.
So I was like, wow, this is a perfect time. You know, we can kind of diversify and get into something new. Maybe, you know, get different viewers.
Yeah.
And then we went to go see the movie, and I was thinking, okay, well, maybe we have, you know, a bridge of a gap of, you know, something new in this genre that we both love that we can pull in and, you know, basically discuss with y'all.
Yeah.
Rather than that, we just end up in, you know, in this, like, realm of confusion where it's like this had nothing of the video game. Well, not nothing, but...
No, but I think... You had a lot to work with, and you used very little.
Yeah.
Do I give props to you for practical effects? Yeah, dude. Practical effect-wise was good. The kill scenes were great. Amazing. The storyline was good for an original story. The problem is it wasn't an original story that you were taking from. You were taking from a video game, and you'd use... It's kind of like Resident Evil, the movie Resident Evil. You know, I love those movies because I saw them... As just a fan of Resident Evil, was I kind of disappointed that Leon and, you know, Jill weren't in it? Well, Jill was in it, but Jill, the first one, you know, that they weren't in it. Okay, I was like, yeah, but I watched it as like, okay, maybe this is like a different, you know.
Like a different timeline.
Different take on it, yeah. And this is like parallel to what's going on and like everywhere else. So, but I still enjoyed it. A lot of people hate it, obviously. Hey, I understand. You know, they used the name of the game, and then they kind of used Umbrella Corps and all that.
Yeah.
They at least used more of the source material.
Yeah, that was my thing. Like, with Resident Evil, even though, like, I have played some of those games, like, even though it didn't relate to everything in the games, they threw things at you, just like how I referenced before the first, you know, Spawn movie.
Yeah.
That Todd McFarlane directed. Now, was it completely 100%, you know, canon to the comic books? No. they threw some stuff in there that you're just like, where the hell did you get this? Why the hell did you even present us with that?
Yeah.
And then they threw things in there, like I said, like, you know, Angeline. They threw her in there. But the only way you know it's her is if you read the comics and you see her earrings. And then you're like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
There's, you know, there's an Easter egg. There she is. You know, she's at the ball. But you don't know what the hell, how that relates if you have never read the comics.
Yeah.
They gave you little bits and pieces. This, I feel like, gave you little bits. Not even like a full piece.
Yeah, unfortunately.
And, you know, that's where I think, you know, I think if you have great development, you have a great storyline, you have, you know, you can take it in your own direction.
Yeah.
But, you know, you don't have to keep everyone happy all the time. But, yeah, you do have to kind of go, if you're going to call something, if you're going to, you know.
At least cater to the fan base of the video game.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's who's going to come and watch it, you know. I'm going to make a movie about football, but not have football in it.
Yeah.
You
know, or I'm going to have like two, like you're going to be like at a barbecue and there's going to be a football on a table. And I'm expecting you basically to pull the fact that this movie is about football because in your backyard barbecue, there's a football there.
Yeah.
Like, no.
So yeah, it was a decent movie to watch as just a horror movie lover. But if you were a fan of the game, I would say, hey, just wait
to stream it.
To stream it or till it comes out. Yeah. On digital.
And even then, if you're a true fan of the game, I'd take a hard pass. I would.
Yeah, it would probably just make you more mad.
It would probably just make you mad because I'm not.
And who knows? People might enjoy it for what it is. You know, like I said, we watched it as just movie fans and we enjoyed it to an extent. Like, yes, were there plot holes and was there some weird stuff? Yeah. But for a movie that has like an original storyline, I guess you could say, it was good.
Yeah, for a creepy Groundhog Day, you know, I'd throw it a bone. And yeah. You know,
but for people who, you know, want a, you know, video game adaptation or a movie adaptation of the video game, it's not all going to be there. You'll get your monsters, you'll get your kills, you'll get your stuff, your references, you know, to the game. But as far as, like, seeing the story kind of develop like the game did, it's not going to be there. So no. I would wait for it to come out.
For that, I think you're going to have to, like, you know, keep steering towards, you know, the child-driven ones that have been, you know, in the theaters as of late. You know, Sonic and
Super Mario Brothers. That one was good,
That was great. I love that movie. But, yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully, you know, that's what I'm worried about with these games. Like, these people trying to make, you know, movies or shows based on the video games. They did it with The Witcher. It was good.
Last of Us is a great series.
Oh, yeah, Last of Us is good.
You know, Five Nights at Freddy, even though it's not complete canon, it's...
Yeah, I mean, people are crapping on the casting, and I get it, but at least take it for what it is and enjoy the story. You know, enjoy that they made a movie about your game. Like, that's what's cool. They did Devil May Cry. It looks pretty darn good as an anime.
Yeah.
And they use freaking Nu Metal. Oh, my God, dude. You had me at freaking Limp Bizkit. But, yeah, it was great. Yeah, that was good. But, yeah, this one, you know, it's you know, people. It's probably going to be, honestly, it's going to be divided within the gaming community, the people who love the game. It's going to be divided. There's going to be people who, you know, like it and like, hey, you know, it might not be, you know, directly attached to the game. But it's there.
Yeah,
you know?
The monsters, the kills, the jump scares, they're still there.
Some of the characters, obviously, Dr. Hill, he's, you know, a main antagonist.
He became the Baba Yaga. I mean, it's just, you know, it's good times right there.
But there's going to be people who are like, dude, you had source material, and you only took the monsters from it, like, and, you know, Peter Stormare, that's it.
Yeah, and you didn't even really explain the monsters all that well. You didn't really give any lore of Wendigos or... Yeah. Anything like that, you just make it seem like spines just grow out. I mean, the transformation into the Wendigo is no different than the blow-up water.
Yeah.
It's like it's the same thing. Like, well, why are there horns growing out of back? Well, why is water making your guts blow up?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's...
Yeah, but... Yeah, that was our review over Until Dawn. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you're like, dude, y'all are stupid, please drop us a line. Let us know. Follow us on Instagram and, you know, and just, you know, comment like, hey, idiots, this is what we actually think or whatever. But as far as I can tell, this is pretty kind of how people are reviewing this movie. But hey, if you watched it as, you know, you'd never played the game and you watched and you enjoyed it, let us know on Instagram. But other than that, you know, thank y'all so much for listening. Continue to review us and rate us. It helps us out a lot. Share this podcast with all your friends and family and strangers alike. And yeah, we will see you
next week.